episode of Auto Dealer Live is brought to you by Auto Dealer University.
And, you know, we're going to kind of just talk about some things that we've been hearing dealers bring up, and you guys have been talking about this all week, really. I know the two of you guys have been kind of going at it a little bit as well. I want to find out which side of the fence, you know, our audience lands on some of these topics. And, you know, some of the things you guys have been kind of debating and talking about and really have been in thinking about a lot. We've been talking about pay plans. We've been talking about money. It's really
how to get paid, baby.
I mean, it's always a hot topic with salespeople, and everyone has an opinion and a way to do it. You know, Chris, I want to throw you out there in the fire, so to speak, a little bit. Well, because you know, you brought up something that, and I don't want to get it wrong. And so, and by the way, I don't want to lead the witness, you know, or anything like that. And
objection, so leading the witness. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't.
Your Honor, I want to enter Exhibit A.
So I don't want to lead the witness, and I want to make sure that I get, you know, get it just as a question. It's hard for me to do that because, you know, it's hard for me to do that. But so we were talking about pay plan, and the subject of commission versus base came up, and you know, you guys differed a little bit on this. And if I get this right, you think a bigger base, you know, and a smaller commission is the way to go. And, you know, and Cribs, of course, disagrees with that too. You know, not that you think that there needs to be a base, but there needs to be a sky's the limit commission. And then this is going to be the premise of several things that we talk about today, which, you know, lead into, you know, time off, leading into, demands. And, if somebody closes the deal, should they be first in line to get the next up? You know, should it be really a demand on the up system? Mm-hmm. You know, if now you're talking about, you know, time off and commission, and does the person that's getting commission work harder, you know, to get that deal? Is gross a bad word? We're going to talk about, can we lay our head down at night? We were talking a little bit about this, where you were saying that you would walk away from a deal. Again, I don't want to lead the witness. Already see you.
I didn't say walk away.
Well, I thought you said walk away pretty much. Maybe you said crawl. I don't know. But you said walk away.
He said
away.
He wouldn't do certain things.
Yeah, he said I wouldn't sell a car. You know, you said I would walk away from a deal if, you know, maybe a single mother or a veteran, rather than shove them into a car, you know,
walk away from a deal.
Okay, then what did you say?
I said I wouldn't slam someone in a car
under
certain parameters that – knowing that they couldn't afford, and we pushed them over the edge for that specific car.
Okay.
Meaning that we try and switch them.
Would you, Cribs?
Absolutely, I would.
Okay, so there's the difference. Okay, so Cribs would, you wouldn't. So we're going to talk about those types of things today, and we want our audience to weigh in.
Lou's frowning on me like I'm a bad guy.
I'm in the minority. I agree with Chris 100%.
I clubbed a baby seal over the head. I
mean, you might as well.
Can I say this, though? I don't think that Chris is in the – when we talked about this when we were kind of doing pre-show. I personally – he didn't want to be the fall guy or bad guy on this. And I say, Chris, you know, first of all, I don't know if you're going to be the guy that people disagree with or the guy – I'm pretty sure it's going to be Cribs, because Cribs just said basically he'd slam a single mom into a car if she couldn't afford it. I don't know if anybody's going to agree.
Larry, let me start by saying this. You know, I think we all go into whatever we're doing with certain prejudices, okay, and we all have different backgrounds and things of that nature. I was raised by a single mother, okay, and I was also raised in an environment where we had a lot of respect for our military personnel, and that carried with me into my adult life, and with that being said, there's just certain people I would not
slam
into cars.
Well, here's my question.
Meaning, so you discriminate.
Absolutely. I discriminate. So Cribs would it be was a single mom that I know couldn't afford the car? And she's,
right. So Cribs was raised.
Slam him into the car.
Cribs was raised by a baby seal, and he was in the military.
And I'm thankful for Chris and his store who lets her come over to my store so that I can go ahead and deliver.
I didn't say let her go.
Hold on, Chris.
I'm sorry.
Well, hold on a second, guys. Let me try to referee this a little bit. So Cribs, you were in the military, so I want to point that out.
And raised by, well, I won't say she's single, but, you know, she single the majority of her life.
But here's the deal, Chris. But then I got one other thing I got to bring up to on this backside. Well, the backside of that comment. So basically, you're selective on who you would what take advantage of. I mean, so I wouldn't take advantage of it. I take advantage of another human. Just right. Not if they were in the military.
Oh, you're married. I said I discriminated.
You're married and you got a husband. Okay, I'm going to knock your head off then. I don't care. I mean, you might be on the bad side. Okay, so weigh in, audience, before these guys get started, go ahead and start the comment wheel going because I'm going to read comment.
I knew I was going to gang.
Wait a second. You're the one that just brought up. You were like, you know, I just feel like, you know, if they're in the military, a single mom, there's certain people I wouldn't take advantage of.
Hey, I'm going to back you up, Chris. I'm not going to let that slide. You can't advantage of a single mom.
I agree with that.
I agree.
So you can take advantage of someone else?
I'm not saying take advantage of them. What I'm saying is I'm not going to beat someone over the head knowing that the car's going to get rebuilt in 90 days.
I can't wait to get anyone on the stand.
But is it anyone or is it just some people? I mean, because I want to make – chose the words to say.
Okay. I'm not going to back down from that. I would say I have more of a issue with those two types of people, mm-hmm. lifestyles, people, right. or whatever. Now, that's not to say that I'm not going to try and prevent someone from being slammed into a car that I know they can't afford. Mm-hmm. And – they are wishy-washy on it. I'm going to try and switch into something they can't afford. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying I'm going to let them walk out the dealership.
You have people like Ted Hip.
Because at the end of the day.
You have people like Ted Hip who just said, if you and the bank say yes, I'm good to go.
Woo. He said, I agree, Ted Dave Cribbs. I'm here to sell. And if you and the bank say yes, I'm good.
Yeah, and you know, I haven't been able to take the stand yet, but I'll be happy to.
By all means.
So there's a couple of issues here. When we talk about, well, I wouldn't take advantage of this particular group of people. Mm-hmm. Now that tells me, wait a minute, is there a mindset that we're taking advantage of people? Because I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking advantage of someone. We come to work to sell, but we also come to work, and Lou's over there laughing now, but we come to work.
Let's ignore Lou.
We have a certain obligation as well. I mean, let's take a look at the facts, okay? Mm-hmm. We're hired by someone to not only sell, but to sell at a certain price, right? We have our MSRP, our manufacturer's suggested retail price, which is a fair price for the car, and you have an owner who's invested millions of dollars of their own money, or they're on the hook for that, mm-hmm. To have a profitable organization, and they hire you to represent them.
Right.
And if the value is there, and we have a suggested price, then by all means, I think it's fair.
So, Cribs, I'm going to play devil's advocate. So you're approaching the desk, right? You get some numbers.
Absolutely.
You go back to a single mother, or you go back to anyone. You know what I mean? Let's just face it. Obviously, if you care enough about a single mother or someone in the military, you care about everyone.
Sure.
I mean, so you're not out to screw somebody over.
Correct.
But you go back and the person you're talking to, really, they're trying to get the best deal. They're not skeptical, so to speak, or like giving you a hard time.
Sure.
Or one of these know-it-alls, you know, they're sitting there, they're genuinely nice people. And they're like, you know, I hope I get the best deal. And
sure.
You know, but they're easy to, if you wanted to take advantage of, and you have that person. Okay. So the empathy comes in. You go back to the desk, they give you numbers and you go, what, you know, and they already tell you they don't want to be there. And that's not the best deal. It's not the best deal, and you know it's not the best deal. They tell you, hey, go sell them this. This is the deal we can do. You go back to the customer. Do you tell them it's the best deal?
Absolutely, you do.
Okay.
And here's why. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's funny because there are a lot of dynamics going on here that you could argue certain points. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, when I go to the desk, whether I know or not that I've seen cars go out of there before at a lower number, there might be another $800 here, whatever the case may be, it's irrelevant. We're talking, each deal is individual. Mm-hmm. So when I go to the desk and they say, this is what I want for the car right now in real time, I believe that that's what they want for the car. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna respond accordingly. That is the best price I was given by my boss,
right.
Okay? And I feel the same way when I'm penciling a deal and I say, hey, this is what I can do right now based on the current conditions. Here's my offer to the customer. Guess what I just did? I just gave the customer a concession, mm-hmm. If I moved it all from MSRP.
So Chris, so go back to Chris. Chris, here's a question. Calvin Pierce said this. I have told people that you can't afford that car. Then get them in a car they can't afford and they buy from me again and again.
Okay,
and I've done that in the past too.
And I wouldn't argue that, but go ahead.
I totally agree with that.
So okay,
here's a scenario. Mm-hmm. These are things that have actually happened over my lifetime. When I sold cars, I had a woman come in, mm-hmm. and I had a management staff that was telling me to slam her in this one particular car because we made more money on it. But at the end of the day, I knew she couldn't afford it. She knew she couldn't afford it. And to push her over the edge to buy that specific car because we made a few extra dollars just didn't make any sense. It was going to end
Were you on commission? Did you get a piece of that extra money?
Yes. Okay. But I mean, I rather
I'm asking.
But I'd rather sleep at night than worry about a couple hundred dollars commission or $1,000.
So how did what'd you do?
So we ended up. Do
you have a posturepedic?
No, I ended up switching her to another car. Right. We made a little less money on it.
What did they say to you?
She's happy.
What did they say to you when you came back in?
Huh?
What did they say to you about that deal? What did your management say? Be honest. What did they say?
They were disappointed, but I mean, I sold cars. Do you think though? Like
is there a pecking order sometimes in the business where in a dealership cribs? If so, let's say a guy got cribs comes back.
Wait a minute. Let me finish what I was going to say. I was going to say. She came back three other times in the course of 5 years and bought cars from me.
She was happy. Absolutely. So, okay. And by the way, by the way, guys, let me just tell the audience here. We're not trying to prove what's right or wrong. If I sound like I'm leaning one way, I'm not. I'm actually moderating the two of these guys in talking points today. But these are issues that are dealt with. So, Cribs, can I ask you something?
Yeah.
That same scenario. Are dealerships where you walk back in, you don't do what your management said to do, right? Is there a scenario where you're viewed as weak possibly and that can affect your job moving forward?
Well, there absolutely is. But I would say now we're getting into kind of more. Mm-hmm. I would say that if you're going into a recurring issue with where you feel is something that it borders unethical.
Right.
So, for example, in Chris's scenario, if I have someone that I know I'm on the wrong car, but we might make a little extra money. No, I'm not going there. If if I can put them in the right car and we're making a little bit less and it's a better fit for everyone, then I'm going to go that direction. But if a sales manager is telling me, hey, you have to go this way because we're making more money in this particular scenario, in that case, then we have to kind of evaluate, is this the place we want to be? Is this the type of conditions we want to work under? Going back to the earlier scenario where, you know, hey, we're making good gross on a particular, you know, someone who maybe we even feel doesn't afford the car or can't afford the car. Here's what I would say to that. If we're able to select something that's more in their budget, that's great. Right. But what I have found in my experience is the person who maybe doesn't want to settle for something a little bit less, then to me, that's kind of, you know, kind of tilting everything. In other words, if they want to purchase, they want to buy, even though it may not be the best financial decision for them, it's more important for them to get the car they want and things like that, then I'm certainly not going to let them go down the street and buy another car and do the same thing somewhere else. I'm going to deliver the car. Plus, I believe every car is not only worth full price, but I believe it's up to the individual as well to determine. They can say yes or no at any time to determine whether or not that fits their personal budget.
Right,
and
right.
And that's fair. I mean, I didn't lose a deal. I mean, I may have lost a handful of deals over this topic. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, if somebody won't switch, you know that's the only car they're willing to buy, and they're just not going to switch. Okay, I'm going to push them over to buy the car. But
let's go to another really common scenario, which is holding back on the trades. Because now we start to get into something that could be a little bit more controversial. Because say, for example, that we got an Amber Alert there.
Amber Alert on the phone right there. go ahead.
Let's say, for example, that we're already at a good profitable deal. Maybe we're at MSRP, but we have an opportunity now because.
So you're talking about this scenario. This scenario, though, is handled at the desk level. This scenario is out of the salesperson's hands in reality.
I'd say most of the time. Yeah. Not always. In fact, we have a dealer recently that actually altered their pay plan because of this scenario. Mm-hmm. But let's say that we're sitting on a really good deal, and we want to probably try to even increase that from the desk perspective, and we hold back on the trade. So a salesperson who maybe would be in the know, because they're not always in the know of the ACV, the actual cash value, but if they are in the know and they realize that we're trying to hold back another $2,000 on the trade, is it ethical or unethical for them? What is that like when you go in and, you know, you have to present that number to the customer? I'd love to hear our viewers on that one, by the way.
Well,
yeah. But here's a comment. Brad Smith said we should be there to help them, but what they want and what they can afford, not what the store wants to sell. That is a long-term recipe for failure. Andrew Breedlove said, build value, hold gross. That's one of our mottos. John Kettenborn said, when we provide a value great enough for the customer to be willing to be stretched, it's a win-win. It's on us as salespeople to provide the value and service. You know, so, hey, let me, so we'd love to hear your comments on that.
Yeah, let's give the call in number two real quick, Dave, because I know people are anxious to weigh in on some of these things. 813-574-1820, 813-574-1820. Call in. We'll get you on, and you can speak your piece as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, because, you know, I'd love to see some of the keyboard warriors come on the phone, man. I know, you know, you say, well, that's not my speed. We'll make it your speed today. Come on, get on the phone, and let's hear you. 813-574-1820. Hey, can I bring up something else real quick?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to be all over the place, but we're going to be kind of going back and forth. I kind of brought this up to you guys. One of my dealers in California was kind of talking to me a little bit, and I took some notes on some information here. I'm going to ask this question. So let's look at, you know, and I'm going to throw some names out there. You know, this is not saying anything negative about anybody. We don't have any of these guys as our sponsor, you know, anymore or anything like that. So we're going to name names. All right, Costco, TrueCar, right? Any other low-grossing internet-type deals, right? Let's talk about this, because now we're at the end of the month. Right now it's a perfect – or not the end of the month, but we're going to be coming into the middle of the end of the month.
And sure.
At the end of the month, it's almost always, right, about the low-grossing, right, volume-generating deals. You have salespeople, and a lot of times, Cribs, Chris, the experienced salespeople – I know some of you guys are on this call watching right now – weigh in. The experienced salespeople especially aren't about gross at the end of the month. They're bringing their managers, we're talking about pay plans, all of the way below invoice crap deals, right, just to hit their bonuses. So here's my thing, man. What about that? Let's put that out on the table.
I think that's reality, right? That's reality. Sure. And if I'm in the salesperson role, I can share one thing. Even though I'm all about maximizing the profit and holding the profit, even when I get into what we all know is a mini deal range, right? Mm-hmm. Where maybe we're making the dealership's making 500, but I know it'll be easy for me to close them only making a bust out deal, for example. You know, how hard am I going to work? And I think this is your point, number one of your points. How hard am I going to work to hold that 500 when I can get that easy deal that cuts gross and just gets me to the next thing? And the reality is that, you know, for me, I do try to hold that money, but at the end of the day, I'm going to do whatever it takes, and there probably is less resistance.
I was going to say I view that as a problem with management. Well, I'm not going to be popular for this. The reason I say that is because if this continues to happen every single month, and you're doing those deals at the end of the month, why didn't you do them 3 weeks earlier?
This is Tom. Tom is shopping for a pre-owned vehicle. Tom wants to make a smart decision on his vehicle purchase, so he's made sure to review the vehicle's history report and compare prices with similar vehicles. He knows purchasing the wrong vehicle can be an expensive mistake, but what Tom doesn't know is that there is a lot more to a pre-owned vehicle than just the history report and price. The process of vehicle reconditioning, preparation, and research is different at every dealer. And the quality of that reconditioning has a major impact on a vehicle's safety and value. Tom should be shopping at dealers who use Auto iPacket, a digital document folder that has everything he needs to know about a pre-owned vehicle all in one place. Every complete Auto iPacket includes a vehicle history report, mechanical inspections, reconditioning receipts, manufacturer equipment breakdown, and factory warranty information. Reviewing the Auto iPacket allows Tom to know for certain that he is purchasing a safe, properly reconditioned, and well-equipped pre-owned vehicle from a trustworthy and transparent dealer. Purchasing a vehicle without all the proper documentation is risky business. There is more to a pre-owned vehicle than a history report and price. Let us show you. Ask for an Auto iPacket at a reputable dealer near you.
Yeah, I just want to get Michael started in the conversation. You know, Michael, you've been a general manager there at Jim Shorty for a while. What is the one thing that you've changed in your store over the last 3 years that maybe from old school to kind of new school? What is the one thing that you can think of on top of your head within the last 3 years that you've changed?
Well, hey, guys. First of all, thank you for having me on. Yeah, this is Mike Engel. I want to thank Lou for being an absolute saint and being patient with me. This summer has been a little bit hectic. So just to give you some background, I'm still somewhat new to Pittsburgh. So I moved, I was a general manager. I became general manager at 29 years old in the D.C. metro area with a big group called the Lustein Automotive Group. I then became a general manager with the Lindsay Automotive Group. I moved to Pittsburgh to be a managing partner in December of 16. We bought a new store in the North Hills. Now we just opened my second store. I am actually celebrating my one-year anniversary this month. I opened up a Kia store just about 10 minutes away from my Chrysler store. And I'm actually in the process of building a third store, which is why my summer has been a little hectic. So, Lou, thank you for being so patient with me. I had a mentor a long time ago that used to always say, never say, you know, people that say they're too busy are people that make too much money. So I'm always very cautious to ever say to somebody I'm too busy, but I've been getting pretty close to saying that this summer. In terms of changes, you know, I did come up, fortunately, I think, in like an old school system. I started selling cars in 2002 and came up in the days. I tell my sales staff a story all the time. I came up in a store that when we were a heavy commitment store, and we used to have this thing on the sales tower called a commitment basket. And when we wrote up our customers, and I was at a big Chevrolet store in Virginia Beach, Virginia. This was a high-performing store. When we came up to the sales tower with our worksheet, you couldn't even get a deal started without a real commitment. The commitment wasn't just a signature on a worksheet. We used to come to the sales tower with credit cards, Amex, wedding rings, watches. Like, our general manager, general sales manager, would literally make us come up to the sales tower with a tangible, like, you better be able to touch it, feel it, see it, commitment. And that, like, raised me in a pretty tough environment. So I'm grateful looking back on it, on how much sales training that gave me. But I can tell you I don't have a commitment basket on my current sales tower. So We're not asking people for their wedding rings. We're not asking people for their firstborn child, their blood type. I've been on both sides of it. I have tried to be somewhat progressive. I think at the end of the day, it's a people business. And so all I try to do is cater to people. So, you know, in terms of what we've changed since I've even come here, we are a lot more streamlined with our CRM. 3 years ago, I was still doing handwritten worksheets. And I finally have progressed to where I believe in, you know, streamlining the process, having the worksheets printed directly from the CRM. I still love some of the old school part about the car business because I still think that's what helps people build relationships. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we try to make it so efficient, like we all want to become like the Apple store. Well, I don't have a relationship with not one of my Apple salespeople. I don't know their names. I'm not going to go back and ask for somebody in an Apple store. So I still try to caution people to, you know, be careful what they wish for. Because I want to build relationships, and relationships take time. Time, you know, somebody told me one time, time stands for things I must earn. I can't earn somebody's trust. You know, I can't earn their, you know, long-term business, their commitment to doing business with me in a 30-minute sales process. You got to take your time. So anyway, appreciate you guys having me on. Lou, I don't even know if I answered the question. I was just thankful that Lou was so patient with me this summer because I have wanted to jump on with you guys, but it's been a little bit of a busy summer.
Well, hey, we're glad you're on, Mike. And, yeah, you did answer the question. And, you know, you not only did you answer the question, I think you gave us a little bit of fodder to move forward on as well because, you know, the shows – the way we like to do the shows, we kind of let the guest set the tone, and you did that. So let me go to Matt Koenig. Matt, you heard Mike. You know, Mike's been in the car business since the early 2000s, moved from the Metro D.C. area, and now he's up in P.A. And so, Matt, you know, listening to this old school versus new school, you know, and kind of piggybacking on what Mike said, I want you just to kind of pick up where you want, you know, add what you'd like, and let's see if we can, you know, progress the conversation forward. Matt Koenig.
Yeah, thanks, man. It's been a while since I've been on the show, so thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you, it's funny. I love hearing it when you said I grew up kind of old school, and I started in 2002, and I literally just realized how old I now am because I started in 1994 in this business. And I'll tell you, man, it's interesting. I was thinking about this all day with the show. And there's a lot of old school stuff that we're glad we got rid of, like the commitment basket, like the stuff, you know, before walking in, everybody got trained with that stupid question that said, if the numbers and figures are agreeable, are you guys ready to do business today? Like the dumbest question in the world, right? Because we already know the answer. If the numbers aren't agreeable, they're not doing business. So I'm glad to see some of those things go by the wayside. But there are some old school things that I've realized are we've gotten away from that have really hurt our ability to retain customers. I hear a lot of people talk about the lack of loyalty nowadays versus the olden days, and they want to blame it on people's ability to go on the internet. But the real issue, the one old school great thing we should have kept hold of was what I was taught back in 1995, which was when somebody buys a car from you, you schedule it out, and every 90 days, you actually make a personal phone call to them, and you make notes on it. And the crazy thing is, we've got all the technology to be able to make that faster and easier now. But I used to call every customer every 90 days and be like, hey, Dave, this is Matt over at Battle Creek Honda. I'm just touching base because it's been a few months since we talked. Wanted to see if there's anything you guys needed, if I could set up a service appointment, or if there's anything at all I could do to take care of you guys. It was literally that simple. And if I talked to them like in the summer a few months before, and I was like, how's everything with the family? You know, I'd ask them about their kids. You know, I'd be like, hey, Dave, how's Mikey O doing? You know, and you'd be like, oh, Mikey just had a baseball game last week. Oh, man, he hit a triple, man. He's doing good. The next time I'd call you 3 months later, I'd be like, hey, I know the last time we talked, Mikey hit a triple. He had a good baseball game. How was the rest of this season? And now all of a sudden you would go, holy cow, Matt actually cares about me. And the funny thing is, this played out well for me. I had a couple that did not buy a car from me, but I still put them in my follow-up box. Yes, I said box because we had index card boxes. Two of them, one in alphabetical order, one by the month of the year. Every time you talk to somebody, you'd move their card back 3 months, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a couple that I had called after they bought a vehicle from M&M Honda in Kalamazoo when I was at Battle Creek. And I called them every few months. So it was 6 or 9 months after they bought their car, I called to touch base. And the lady said, hey, you know what? When we got our car from you, I forgot how to program the radio station. And it was hilarious because she didn't get the car from me. And I said, Patty, you guys bought the car at M&M. She goes, oh, gosh, I'm so sorry. I can call them. I'm like, no. I'm happy to go through this with you and walk you through programming it. So I walk her through it. And I kid you not, 3 weeks later, they brought their daughter in to buy a Honda Civic from me. And wow. That's a deal I never would have got had I not made those personal phone calls for, you know, that 6 or 9 month period, whatever it was, after they bought the car.
That's
so
awesome.
I think one of the things we're missing that's old school that we really need to bring back is using our telephone like a telephone and actually showing people we care about them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good stuff. That's good, Matt. You know, you just reminded me of something too. And that was great. It was a great story. And, you know, sometimes I've seen people who talk to customers that they were working a deal with, but they ended up going buying something else somewhere else. The customer calls them to get help, and then they get personally hurt, and they tell the customer, you know what, why don't you go bring it to the salesperson that you bought it from, instead of taking that opportunity like you did to win them. Even though they didn't buy, you could still win that, and then they could buy again, or they can, like you said, like
2 weeks later.
Refer a friend.
Well, so. Not only that, it's you act like, I mean, I guess the person that would do what you said, Joe, which there's plenty that would, I guess they plan on being in the car business for a short period of time.
That's right.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're thinking short-sighted there.
That's right.
You know, well, let me throw this out there, and I'm going to bring Ben into the conversation. And, Ben, you know, you're part of a dealership group, and I know Scott has been in the business for quite a long time, and you're a fairly new general manager in the last year or so. You know, bringing you into this conversation, maybe you've only had experience with new school, maybe not, maybe you've had both, but, you know, Matt brought up something, or and when Matt and Mike were talking about not knowing their Apple, I think it was Mike that said not knowing his Apple rep. You know, I was thinking as Matt was talking about Mike's comment about Apple, and not only that, I don't really know, you know, I don't really have a rep that's gone out of his way or out of her way to help me in Apple. You know, they don't go the extra mile per se. They stick to their process, but really, when it's outside of their process, it's kind of like, yeah, you know, it's not really a customer service environment, in my opinion. I mean, they do it, but they're not. You know, there's no skin in the game, in my opinion. So, kind of bringing you into this, Ben, into this conversation, I want you to weigh in and kind of, add to this conversation and welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thank you, and thank you for having me back on the show again. You know, it's always good to be on here, so this is my third time on Auto Dealer Live, and I'm grateful to be back on here, so I appreciate y'all. I am fairly new as far as general manager is concerned, but I've been in the car business in 2 months. It'll be 19 years for me, so,
wow.
So I literally grew up in the car business since I was 14 years old, but but it's always been something that we're talking about, just as far as evolving, you know, with the way that the market is evolving, our store, how we operate, it's always changing, and you know, we always want to be ahead of it. One thing that, you know, Michael was talking about, obviously I kind of grew up in a similar place, that more aggressive dealer group or getting the commitments or coming back with anything that we could possibly have, hold on to everything that you can and never let the customer go and keep things hidden. You know, I'm so glad that those times are past us and we're able to move on from that. As far as what Matt was talking about, you know, follow up, we're in a little bit of a smaller town. I mean, Stanton, Virginia, we only have a population of about 22,000 people. And so for us to sell what we need to, 160 cars a month going to 200 cars a month, you know, it's so important that we still keep that customer base or that follow up, and that we're always there for our customers. You know, heck, our customers are coming to our birthday parties and our dealership events, and you know, we're inviting them to participate in different events that we're having here, and you know, just kind of creating that family atmosphere. But where it's changed is not only with our customers, where we're evolving and we're, you know, being more transparent, and we're coming out full with everything, fully disclosed, and we're just making it very easy. But we're also doing the same, you know, with our employees. I mean, heck, when I was growing up in the car business, as employees, we were kept in the dark. We were never aware of where we were in the deal or what we were doing next or anything like that, or our future. And that's also evolved and changed. And it's important that we let our employees know we're always promoting from within, like myself, and I've been able to move up from within and, you know, to build that atmosphere. That has also changed, and we share everything. We don't hide or keep anything from our customers or our employees, and being able to see that change on both sides has been great, and it'll go a long way. You know, having the Apple rep that you know by name, we want that here. You know, we have customers come in and hug us and bring us cakes and food. I'm gonna get fat with all that they bring us, but you know, we're very fortunate, and I'm glad to see the company and the business evolving.
That's great, man.
Thank you, Ben.
Yeah. Hey, gang, thanks so much for being on. And, you know, we'll just get it started. Let's go to Sean Hayes, and sales manager at Dan Cummins Chevrolet Buick. And, Sean, you have, you know, an incredible following. You are connecting with people in a modern way, and it's amazing what we can do with social media now. You've been a kind of a poster child, if you will, for the effectiveness of what you can do online and the resources that are out there for salespeople and sales managers in this business and many more. But you know, tackling the subject of old school versus new school, you know, it seems like we, you know, as we move more and more toward a consumer-friendly experience and we lose some of the old bad habits that we had in the auto business, it seems like, impression that I get anyway is that when we start talking about the basics of sales and really doing the things, striving for 100%, you know, test drives, striving for, 100% TOs, striving for, you know, penciling a deal, working cash down, all of the practices that we know help, you know, ensure a successful transaction, have we lost some of that? And do we consider that old school? Like, in other words, are we kind of laying down some responsibility, trying to take an easier route and kind of in the name of a better experience? Sean Hayes.
Well, hey, Chris, what's up? Hey, David, thanks for having me on, man.
Our pleasure, man.
I would say this, I'm a little bit of old school and new school. So, you know, I believe in the process. I believe in the road to the sale. I believe the training is very, very key. And I believe you should be a good salesperson. Now, you can market yourself to death and you can take all the elements that people hate out of the car business. But at the end of the day, we still have to move people along the sale process. We still have to show value in the product. We still have to, you know, find their need, you know, and turn that into, hey, I'm going to go home and think about it, into a sale that day. So I don't care how cool people are. You still have to be a good salesman. This is a craft. You need to get better at your craft. if you think about it, for the rest of your life, you're going to be doing this. Whether you're in car sales or not, you're still a salesman. Mm-hmm. You sell every day to every conversation you have. You sell every day to your wife, your family, your kids, your friends, whether you're pitching an idea or not. So at the end of the day, it's a craft, and I train every single day, as well as all of our salespeople do here at Dan Cummins. We train on the sales process, and I don't believe that it's dead at all. I just think that a lot of people are focusing more on the marketing, but you still, once you get them in the door, you still have to know what to do with them.
Sean, let me ask you this, as Villa, kind of staying on with you for a second and staying on that subject, because, you know, we go to a lot of these conferences, and, you know, and I'm talking more like the Digital Dealer or the NADA, some of the conferences that have like a lot of expo and vendors and things like that. And look, we're a vendor. So there, I mean, I'm not by any means, I love vendors, but I mean, some of the vendors out there that you hear in their workshops, you know, somehow always trying to change the process up, or always trying to advocate, you know, that the process is dead, or, you know, a lot of these, and there's some really legit things, but a lot of these I have, and I want to see how you feel on this. I've come to the conclusion that a lot of them do it because they can't close, they can't sell. And so they try to change things up and dog it out. I mean, you know, do you think that drives a lot of, not all, but do you think that drives a lot of these so-called, you know, changes in the industry in many cases?
David, I think you're exactly right, to be honest with you. I think you're exactly right. I think a lot, not all, okay, there's some good salespeople out there that are vendors. I've seen them. I mean, they're really good. They can take you right through the process. But at the end of the day, a lot of people, I believe, want to make you believe that the customer hates the process. The sales process is dead. All they care about is the price. What do we do for the experience at the dealership, right? So that's, they want to get you thinking that all customers hate the process. Now, don't get me wrong. There are parts of the process that the customer does hate, okay? And we have to get better at that as an industry. But in general, I believe a lot of it is to push their narrative, you know, to make people believe that, oh my God, I got to change everything. And then what this vendor is telling me right now, will be the cure-all to it, right? So they're trying to sell a product too, and a lot of times it's fear-based. Do you know what I'm saying?
That's good. Yeah, I love that, Sean. Thank you. Thank you very much. And that makes a lot of sense. What do you think, Chris?
I think it makes a lot of sense too. I'd like to get Jeffrey's thoughts on it and bring him into the conversation.
Well, Locke, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
So, Locke, here's my thing. I'm kind of like, you talk about old school, new school. I'm like a new school car salesman that's been in it when old school was going on at an old school car dealership. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. I'm doing Facebook Live videos. I'm doing product videos. I'm doing all that stuff at a dealership that don't even use a CRM tool. We're still using the sticker books here at this dealership. Wow. And, yeah, I mean, and they're knocking down 250, 300 cars a month. And I'm trying, as a salesperson, to get all these, the old school, I mean, there's sales guys that here have been here for 25 years that refuse to change. Mm-hmm. And the we've got the product. We've got, you know, we've got the facility. It's just the fact of just trying to get the mentality changed. So, like, they're watching me out here doing my video and thinking, like, oh, my gosh, what's this guy doing? But then whenever I'm knocking down 8 to 10 cars a month on Facebook, they're like, how you do that?
Right.
So I'm like in a weird situation right now.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Thank you, Jeffrey. You know, it's interesting about that, Cribs. I love that. He's at a 250 car plus store. He's got, you know, some sacred cows, people. And by the way, and they're selling cars. So, you know, sometimes if you don't really know that you need to change when you're making money, you know, but the market's changing around you. And so they're looking at him going, this guy's selling 8 cars on Facebook. How are you doing that? And, you know, I think that one of the ways to really grab the attention of anybody, right, this old school Cribs, is success. I mean, it really is. I mean, when you see somebody, you know, they can make fun of it and say, oh, man, that's just, you know, he's trying this or trying that. But all of a sudden you start knocking down 8-10 cars plus deals a month, right, some extra plus deals. They're going, okay, I'm paying attention. Let me figure out how to get one of these smartphones.
Yeah, the smart veterans.
I'm just picturing a bunch of guys sitting around like on, you know, I don't know. I don't know what I'm picturing, Jeffrey.
Hey, the brick phone. Laying all jokes aside, we have a guy here at the dealership right now. He's been here for 27 years. That at his office, he has no computer, and he doesn't own a cell phone.
Wow.
And there's a wall. I could post a picture on the web page, on the Facebook page. There's a wall Film Salesman of the Month for like the past 15 years.
Wow.
Well, you could, you could, cell phone. You could post, I mean, that on, you could post that on Facebook and he won't see it. You could post that on Facebook and he would never know. Wow, that's
no,
pretty crazy.
No, he'd never have a clue. He'd never have a clue. It's just laying objects aside. It's the truth, man. It's just, and but there's people that come in, and you mentioned about profit, about gross profit, and some people thinking that's a dirty word and everything. Mm-hmm. Gross profit's not a dirty word. I mean, we're selling new cars and making money, man. I mean, it's there, right. there's ways that we're in a small town, we're in a small market, but gross profit's not a dirty word. If you build value in yourself, why not have a customer pay you a little bit of profit?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said for that veteran salesperson. You know, there's some things that they've done right, and I don't think you have to be the master of everything. You know, there are a lot of salespeople that I know personally that have had a very long career that are making, you know, $200,000-$300,000 a year, and you will never see them on social media. They fly under the radar. They're not the type of person that, you know, wants to put themselves out there. But
within the same time, Cribs, there's people that put themselves out there on social media as well that might know how, or they use lead. You know, I looked at like a net, like lead catchers, uh-huh, right?
Yep.
And they probably have more leads than their closing ratio might not be where it needs to be, because what Sean said a minute ago, you still got to know how to handle those leads.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And look, you want to leverage everything that you possibly can. I give right. kudos to you, Jeffrey, for leveraging, you know, the videos and going live and doing Facebook in a place where it's not as common. Obviously, that's working out for you in a great way, and that's a beautiful thing. And of yeah. course, we're the biggest endorsers of that. Look at us here with a big dealer audience going live. So, but you know, I think we'll kind of get back a little bit towards the conversation of are we actually, you know, I even feel like we're almost cheating some of our younger salespeople as they come in by not you know, walking them through a training discipline. You know, one of the things, and I'll throw this out there to Steve Ressler, but one of the things that we commonly hear, and I want to cringe every time I hear it, but I have to handle it delicately because we're talking to decision makers. But one of the things I cringe when I hear is, well, you know, I love this training platform. I love this. And you know, it doesn't matter whether it's Auto Dealer University or any other formal training that's out there. But we hear, hey, I can't get my guys to use it. I can't get my guys and gals to use it, right? Well, I kind of cringe when I hear that, because we come to work every day in this particular company that we're at, and we train for, you know, we work 8 hours a day here, and we probably train about two of those throughout the day. And the point to that is, and the culture is amazing for those who've been here in this company. It's one of the things we hear over and over again. So I think you know, the fear of coming up with some way to have training be a regular part, a routine, a normal part of your culture, right? When you see the baseball team take the field, they're warming up minutes before they play. I mean, this is something that should be a revelation or a light bulb for most of us. But Steve, speak to that. How can we as leaders, owners, decision makers, people that have vision and are leading a team, sit back and say, well, it's effective. I believe in it. I love it. I'm glad I had it. But I can't implement it because I can't get my people to do it.
Yeah, you know, that's, and first of all, thanks for having me on the show. It was great seeing you guys. I hope the move is going good for y'all. So, like I said, it was awesome being there live and seeing what you guys do, what you do with the excitement. I loved it. But when it comes to training, I think, especially in something like sales, I mean, sales is training every day. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm kind of like in that old school mentality, but doing the new school, like what Jeffrey is kind of doing. So, I mean, I've got a sales guy that's working alongside me, and I'm training him every single day. It's word tracks. It's role-playing. You know, one of the things when I deal, you know, start talking to the younger generation, you know, role-playing in different situations, I mean, whether it's price, whether it's a feature, whatever it may be, how do you overcome that situation? And in sales, everything is so different, and it's by the fly the seat of your pants. Mm-hmm. So you have to be willing to think on your feet and be sharp when those situations arise. And really, role-playing, I've done that for over 25 years in every sales job I've ever done, and it's prepared me before I ever go into that meeting, before I see that customer, or I research the customer. You know, one of the things, you know, and talking about, you know, the stuff that Sean and Jeffrey are doing, and you know, with Facebook Live, you know, how many times do we get to know the customer before they even come into the store? If they've got three kids, I think I would talk a little bit differently than if they were single. Or, you know, there's so much information in the digital space about customers that I think we have to train salespeople is, you know, we have to understand the customers better. And that's always a problem that I always feel in the industry. The customer is the one that gets left behind. Hence the reason why a lot of customers just don't come to the dealership. They do everything online.
Yeah.
We got to do a better job of that.